Where do you find yourself along your spiritual journey? This is a great question as we begin today's episode of Mind Shift Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, and I'm wondering where you are on your path, on your journey. And speaking of journeys, we are going to be talking today to an amazing guest from Canada, Stacey Ray, the resting traveler, who has had just a truly unbelievable journey thus far in her life. And the story is still being written. Now, Stacey has just recently come out with a brand new book. It's her first book, literally hot off the presses just a few weeks ago. The title of the book is The Resting Traveler Into the Forest. And in this week's episode and the next, we're going to dive into how Stacey came to write the book. Today's episode, we're going to focus on a little bit of her backstory and her experiences of church and where that led her along this path. And basically, the concept, as I've titled these two episodes, is finding rest on your spiritual journey. And this is really Stacey's passion, is helping people to kind of retain, especially if you've had an experience of evangelicalism, maybe it was toxic, maybe it was damaging psychologically, mentally, emotionally, in terms of your sexuality. A lot of people have. And what's happened is a lot of people have jettisoned entirely their views of God, or I should say that view of God that they were raised with. Perhaps if you're like me, raised in evangelicalism, raised in fundamentalist Christian churches, your view of God, the view of God that you were taught, is a very angry father, a very disappointed dad, as it were, someone who's upset with you, and you're trying and trying and trying to live up to his seemingly impossible standards. So if that sounds interesting to you, we're going to get into that in just a few minutes with Stacey Ray. I'll just say briefly before we get into the chat with Stacey that there's a variety of ways you can get a hold of me. Probably the easiest way is just follow me on Twitter at MindShift2018, and you can get in touch with me there. There's other ways you can contact me via email, Facebook, etc. Those are always in the show notes, as well as how you can be a supporter of this show, help me to cover my expenses by going to patreon.com/mindshiftpodcast. You can also be a patron of the show if you're an Android subscriber on Podbean. You can click the button on there to be a patron of the show so you can support it a couple different ways. And speaking of contact information, you can get a hold of Stacey at her website, therestingtraveler.com. There's information on there about the new book, Into the Forest, as well as a lot of articles that Stacey's written. So that's a good way to find out a little bit more about her. And you can also connect with Stacey on Instagram, and I'll put that in the show notes too. Now, before we get into the chat with Stacey, I wanted to mention something from Karen Garst's new book, Women v. Religion. She was on the show a few weeks ago, and this is something that Stacey and I are going to get into in a few minutes. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but, you know, this whole idea I was mentioning that Christianity in particular, not just Christianity, but Abrahamic religions, really. And this is the subject of Karen's new book, Women v. Religion. They have all these different women that write from their point of view about Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. And one of my favorite chapters so far is by Candace Gorham. Now, she's a therapist, and a lot of what she does is she counsels people that have come out of these controlling religions. And the title of her chapter is Guilt, Shame, and Psychological Pain. And she describes basically the kinds of symptoms that she has to deal with in her patients, in her clients. And she talks about some of the problems that comes out of Christianity in particular. And I think you're going to notice when we talk to Stacey in a minute here that she is basically describing in a personal way the same things that perhaps Candace is talking about in more clinical terms. Because Candace says, she says, quote, "Christianity taps into a childlike urge to please our parents, hence God being referred to as a father throughout the Bible. We learn to value our parents when we are small children and depend on them for everything. She says, we quickly understand that doing things that make them happy helps us feel more bonded and connected to them. When we do something wrong and they punish us, I dare say, she says, that it is the sense of disconnection and fear that they will stop loving us that terrifies us the most. And she concludes by saying, so it is for many people when it comes to their relationships with God the Father, end quote. And I think this is a major, major problem within evangelicalism, that they've told us that God, yes, he's a loving God, but he's a lot of times comes across as this angry or disappointed father. And the major problem is, of course, what happens when you and I do not live up to the standards that we've been told God expects of us. Because Candace goes on to say, she says, quote, the believer is also subjected to unrealistic standards of perfection. Now, quoting from Matthew 5:48, she says, the text says, be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. She says, since no one is perfect, Christians can often find themselves feeling guilty that they violated a law, and they worry that their imperfection will damage their relationship with God the Father. And Candace goes on to say, she says, these experiences inevitably lead to depression and anxiety. It is a common occurrence for me to have clients who talk quite a bit about their religious beliefs. She says, they talk about their religious upbringing, their desire to live according to sound religious doctrine or spiritual guidance, and their dependence on their faith as a coping mechanism. And she concludes, she says, unfortunately, what they don't realize or are unwilling to consider is that it might be that very faith that is at the root of the oftentimes contrived or artificial dilemmas that create the guilt and shame that fuel the depression and anxiety with which they are struggling, end quote. And this is the problem. This is exactly what Stacy's going to describe in a few minutes. And I think a lot of people out there listening who perhaps were raised in evangelicalism or had a taste and experience of it, maybe later in your life, you've come away with this sense of struggling and you've had depression, anxiety, PTSD, and all kinds of other issues and problems. Now, the question is, can you retain a view of God? Can you retain something akin to the Christian faith? This is the question, because a lot of people have walked away. They've become agnostics. They've become atheists. Angry atheist, or even another category that I've just recently added to my ever-growing list of what happens after people leave the church is angry theist, someone who still believes in God but is very, very angry because they've been damaged by that God. And so how do you retain, or can you retain, a view of God? And this is the beauty of Stacy's story, is that not only has she kind of retained some view of God and her Christian faith, whatever that looks like, her view of the Bible has changed. Her view of God has radically changed. And it's that deconstruction and reconstruction, kind of what we talked a little bit about with Sarah Smith last week. How do you do that? And I want to find out, you know, from people who are going through the same experiences. So if this describes you at all, I think you'll get a lot out of this episode and part two next week. So let's go on into the conversation with Stacy Ray, the resting traveler, as we explore this subject of finding rest on your spiritual journey. I am joined by Stacy Ray. Thank you, Stacy, for being on Mindshift Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you know, you are the first Canadian to be on my show. That is an honor.
No way.
Yep.
Are you serious?
I am serious. You are the
That's
first
awesome.
Canadian.
I am proud. Absolutely.
It's funny because for some reason, I don't know why, it's not that I'm discriminating, but everybody basically so far has been from America. I had a bunch of British people on there last year, but for some reason I've been getting all these Americans on there. So you are the first Canadian. Whereabouts are you in Canada? Where do you live exactly?
So I live in British Columbia. We are currently in a small town in the Fraser Valley called Chilliwack.
So, you know, I am an honorary Canadian. This is a funny story I told you the other day. I was going to dig out my shirt. I went and bought a shirt that says, I'm proud to be Canadian, even though technically I'm American. But it was funny because one time I was actually wearing the shirt around Chester in England, and a woman came up to me. She was from Canada. And she said, oh, I'm so glad I finally met a fellow Canadian. Where are you from? And I'm from so-and-so in Canada. And I sat there and I thought, oh, I can't tell her that I'm not Canadian. But I finally did, so I fessed up to. She said, "Well, why are you wearing the shirt then? If you're not Canadian, you shouldn't be wearing that shirt." So, I'm an honorary Canadian. But yes, thank you so much. You have just come out with a new book. Well, it's your first book, isn't it? What's the name of the book?
It is my first book. It's called The Resting Traveler Into the Forest. It is my current child, my current baby.
Your current baby, yeah. It's literally hot off the presses. Why did you call it The Resting Traveler? Because that's kind of the name you've gone by on a lot of your posts I've seen on Instagram and other places. Because I've done a lot of traveling, and I can tell you right now that travel is not very restful. It's very stressful and tiring. I'm thinking it's kind of an oxymoron, isn't it? The rest. How do you rest while being a traveler at the same time? What's the significance of the name?
The name itself, I didn't know what to call my book. If you read my introduction, you'll find out that I actually wrote the book very accidentally. I wasn't planning on writing a book. And when it came time, I was thinking about a title. It kind of was one of those act of God moments where I just sat down at the desk, I wrote it, I was like, oh, there it is. I went into my documents, created the text, and I had a perfect title. It was very weird. It's kind of been a growing thing where I've understood that for years I have been teaching about the concept of rest, and that has come out of my own suffering, learning that I had to rest the body, the mind, and the spirit. And then to come to this place where I was presented with this amazing journey, and the Lord was telling me, this is really about traveling rested. Because like you said, nothing about travel is restful. It is like an arduous thing, especially physically when you're traveling and you've got planes and taxis and all this luggage. And it's messy, and it's just not something that most people enjoy. And so I think the concept is really that we have to learn to get through life traveling that spiritual journey every day in some capacity of rest. Because if we look at who God is, we look at his nature, he is rest. He is what we are to go and find and let into our life, because he brings rest. So really that's kind of the concept of my journey, is being able to teach myself and the people around me, we can travel this life rested.
So there is a rest available for the traveler, the weary traveler, as it were. Now, I'm sure we're going to get more into this in a few minutes. I want to talk about your views of God, because you say the word God, and that immediately triggers a lot of things for a lot of people, doesn't it? Which God? What God? The God of fundamentalism, the God of evangelicalism, the God of liberalism? There could be any God on that spectrum. But you said that you mentioned the word pain, you mentioned your backstory, because the book kind of flowed out of that story, didn't it? So what's your story? How did you come to the place of writing this book accidentally, as you said?
In terms of who this God is that I'm speaking of, I actually prefer to call him Papa. It's how I've referred to God in the book. I received that intimate name just by reading a fabulous book by Paul Young called The Shack. It's quite famous. And in it, he refers to God as Papa. That's one of the names. And it stuck with me because there was this level of intimacy that I had never experienced with God before. And so I've kind of grown into that name when I refer to God. So how I saw God previous to all of this was, you know, I grew up in a church basically from the moment I came out of the womb. Like, I have never known anything different. I'm 38 now, and I had been in church for like 30 years, basically.
So all your life, basically.
Every Bible study. All my life. Like, there's no, like, every service, every Bible study, every production, volunteer events, like, you name it, that was my life. I didn't know anything else. It was a culture, a club. It's like where you look for your mate. It's where you find your friends, your theology. Everything comes from this one pool. So that's how I grew up. And like, I grew up in the 80s and 90s. And so there's like a lot can be said for those type of churches growing up in that era, because everything was exploding, you know, like not just fashion, but ideologies there was a lot happening, and the cultures that I grew up in were like the full gospel, the Pentecostal, lots of independent churches. So those are ones that are very charismatic, right? And in that, I did not see a very loving God. I grew up to know a God who was to be feared. So I'm more and more hearing this is a common, this is a very common story for a lot of people. So my view of God is like, he has two faces. He is loving and compassionate until you sin. You do something that is not in his will. You're expected to be perfect. You're expected to be holy. And it's said that there's forgiveness, but really I never understood all of that. You know, he had the power to take your life away. He had the power to cause disease, to bring disaster on entire countries that didn't follow him. He would kill in his name for his pleasure, according to how the Old Testament was taught. Basically, the God that I knew was a monster.
Could very easily be characterized that way. I think, too, it might have been C.S. Lewis that said, I think it was in Mere Christianity, he said something like, you can face God either as your savior or as your judge. You pick which one. Basically, if you accept Christ, he's your savior. If you don't, then he becomes your judge. So yes, there's definitely these twin sort of aspects of God, isn't it? The loving, merciful God, or the judge who is going to sit there and weigh up your life and find things, you know, wanting in the balance at the end and probably send you to hell. So this is the God that, it's very much the God of evangelicalism, charismatic churches as well. What are you afraid of, though? The fear that he was going to find you wanting and you weren't good enough for God?
It was fear of punishment, to be honest, because in all the ways that they would tell you from the pulpit that, you know, God is merciful. God is loving. You are so uniquely created. You know, he's formed you in the palm of his hand. He knows the amount of hair on your head. And you're like built up with this belief that you're precious. You're treasured. But the flip side was like, I feared that my name would be erased from the book of life. I would lose my crown. I would be condemned to hell to be in eternal torment. And the torment that they would describe was so varied. I mean, in one breath, it was the torment of hell as being separated from God. And in another breath, it was actual physical torment or the torment of looking at your life in regret. There were so many opinions of what that would be. I'm pretty sure that they preached more about the angry side of God than they ever did the loving side. I feared sickness and disease in my life. I felt responsible for a great portion of my life for, like, the problems of other people. So if we were having financial difficulties in my family, I felt like that was my fault. It felt like my sin had, like, brought that upon our house. You know, we were taught you could lose your salvation. And, again, there's all these, like, rules and loopholes. And it was insanity. God was responsible for every kind of evil in the churches that I grew up in.
You know what's weird too is that I'm convinced more and more that a lot of Christians today, if you ask a Christian, you would say, are we living under the Old Testament law today? They would say, absolutely not. There's no way. Of course not. We're in the age of grace and all this. But the fact is, they really live their lives as if they're living under the legal codes of the law, in the sense that it's a reward and punishment system, isn't it? And that's what I hear you just described. God is keeping score. He's got this ledger up there in the sky, kind of like Scrooge, you know, with his money counting everything, the good and the bad, or the Santa Claus God. If you're naughty, you won't get any presents. If you're good, he'll reward you. And so, yeah, you could easily do something to make him angry, and then something else could set him off. So, yeah, it's funny because I remember one time when I was living in Seattle, when I was a single guy years and years and years ago, my car stereo got stolen out of my car. I came out one morning and it was stolen, and I came back in the house and I was really upset. I just bought this really nice stereo and someone stole it like a week later. And my friend, who we were both at church together, he said, have you been tithing? And I said, what does that have to do with me getting my car stereo stolen? He said, well, it's obvious. If you haven't been tithing, God's going to get his stuff back one way or the other. So, you know, he engineered it so that your stereo got stolen because you haven't been tithing. But that's the mentality, isn't it? If you haven't been doing mm-hmm. something, God will punish you, and that's why your stereo got stolen.
That's right.
It's a crazy system, really. It actually is a reward and punishment system. And yeah, there's a lot of fear in there. So were you able to talk about this with anybody at the church? I mean, when you were growing up and going through all this stuff?
You could say that I had my fair share of the pastor's office.
You were
visiting place, yes.
Yeah, so he or she knew you well?
Yes, multiple pastors knew me well. It's not that I was trying to be a troublemaker. I actually fit the model of what they wanted. Like, I was that good Christian girl because I learned that you had to kind of stay, like, kind of under the radar in order to be accepted. So I played that part very well, and I believed so much of what they told me that I became that part. But then every now and then something would happen and I couldn't ignore it. It was like, it's seeing these shadows in the church. You know, there was hypocrisy or a lot of unfairness and justice and things that just did not make sense, because sometimes these were the rules you followed, but then sometimes there were other rules, and I couldn't kind of make this connection. So every now and then there would just be this outburst of like, why doesn't someone stop the insanity, you know? And so I would make my case or say whatever, and that usually landed me in hot water, sitting in offices with or without my parents, and fun times. I was kind of, in a lot of ways, that black sheep, but at the same time, you wouldn't know that, because it was a very detrimental thing to you if you didn't follow that protocol. Like, you were ousted, you were not accepted, and I wanted to be accepted. I was very insecure, and I think I look back now, that insecurity was because I didn't know who God was, therefore I didn't know who I was. How can I say that I can love myself when I'm not even sure the person who made me, like this divine being, I don't even know what he thinks about me, because I'm getting mixed messages.
He's probably disappointed. Yeah, he's disappointed or angry at the very least, because you haven't lived up to the expectations. I've found that people like you, well, I'm the same way. I mean, I was always the troublemaker too, so there's two of us out there, Stacy, so don't feel bad about sitting in the pastor's office. I was the same way because I had a lot of questions. Those kind of people, though, are the ones that the church should really be listening to, because they're seeing some of the problems. But of course, a lot of times, as you say, you end up having to conform and wear the mask, and then you just become another sheep in the herd, I guess. I don't know. But you can't mm-hmm. bury that cognitive dissonance forever, can you? It's going to come out somewhere.
No, exactly. And it did. And that's kind of how I landed at the book, was because there's only so much you can repress for so long. And so my husband and I, we had been out of church for quite a few years. And we got to this place where we realized that, like, that world is toxic. Until some things change, we don't belong in that world, and that may never happen. And so we just kind of started to do this deconstruction process on our own. And for me, that was a time of being able to kind of see everything without having to conform, to be able to fully express, this is my thoughts, these are my questions. I don't know how you guys think this makes sense. I just started to let all of it out. And in that, I found that I was letting out a lot of repressed anger and confusion, so much confusion. And I found an online group that literally was like a life-saving group, because no one around me, because remember, I grew up in a bubble, and even if you leave the church, there's so many of those people that are still in your bubble. So there's not a lot of, like, pool to draw from outside of what you know. And so I have all these people around me, and I'm starting to have this unveiling of my life, and they have no idea what to do with me. They can't understand me. I'm getting called, like, all kinds of names, like heretic. People are praying for my salvation again.
You're that lost, huh?
I'm, like, saying things that they don't understand because, and I realize what I'm about to say could sound very harsh, but looking back, I feel like those cultures can be very brainwashing. And I never learned how to think for myself. So here I am learning how to think for myself and ask questions for myself to a group of people who has never experienced that before. So it's a very lonely place to be. And I know that there are people who are listening to this who have that same experience, that they feel so alone, because a church, as much as maybe it's a place to, or we're told it's a place to learn, if you boil it down, it's kind of just a club. It's a place for gathering. And when you lose that community, and then you have that community a lot of times coming against you, it is traumatically lonely.
Yeah, you can be ghosted very easily, for sure. That's basically what happened to us and many other people when we left the church. Everybody said, oh, we'll get together, we'll have lunch, we'll have coffee, blah, blah, blah. And then it never happened. And all those people basically they're gone. But they're in their bubble. I mean, I get it. I've seen people leave the church before, and that's what happens. You know, you can't keep track of everybody and all the rest of it. I guess that's what happens. But like, you're right. It's the way we do community a lot of times, or the way we've grown up doing community. What about your mental health? Because one of the things that's come out talking to all these women over the last couple of months, going back to Dana Stinson and Valerie Wade and Deanna Adams and Karen Garst and now you and Sarah Smith last week, every single one of these women were raised within evangelicalism, except for Karen. She was actually raised in pretty liberal Lutheran church in the Midwest, but she was lucky in that regard, I think. But this issue of mental health, emotional health, sexuality, it's so damaging. You know, Sarah said that she learned to loathe herself because she didn't do her gender correctly. She found herself attracted to girls, and she told her story last week about the church actually outed her to her parents, even though she begged them not to do it, because she was not ready at 16 to be telling her parents, oh, I think I'm gay. You know, so incredibly damaging, thoughts of suicide and all the rest of it. You know, and this was the church doing this. So how did it affect your mental health, your emotional stability?
Well, for me, it boiled down to identity, because I found that that's kind of like that root of my story was I was never good enough. So the God that I saw always expected more. And that is a very deep wounding to who you are when your true self, who you just, you know, like you're saying, the 16-year-old, it's just who she is. And to be told there's something wrong with you, you know, that's very, very wounding. And so I'm a very opinionated person. I'm very loud and sunshiny, you know. But the agenda, while I was growing up, it always felt like it was, we have to fix her. The fixing Stacey movement, you know. So, like, there was a constant sending me to retreats and having me read books and be more like this person. And then they would pray for you, and they would say things like, you know, we pray this and that she would see what an amazing woman she is and you would help her, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't receive it positively. I received it like, see, even in God's world, prophesying through these people, I'm not good enough. And so I found that my emotional struggles, my mental struggles all boiled down to not being good enough. And so I had like a kind of a perfect storm, because I had some post-traumatic stress from an event that happened with my husband. So in 2012, my husband actually fell off of our roof and he broke his back, and it was just like the craziest day ever. I found him in our backyard and he wasn't breathing and his tongue is hanging out and his eyes are just not there. He's just not there. And I can't find a heartbeat. it was just so overwhelming. And instead of calling 911, my first response is, just tell his spirit to come back. Like, it just seemed very simple. And I did, and he started breathing, and it was this amazing miracle of him going into the hospital, having a broken back, and 8 hours later, walking out. You know, like, it was a fabulous way to end a possibly totally other story. But in all of that, there were so many things that happened. We ended up losing our home. We had to claim bankruptcy. We were living with my parents for 9 months. And in that time of my husband, he still had some brain trauma, working through a lot of his stuff. A couple years later, when we had moved here to Chilliwack, I found myself in a place where I had been working so hard to just, like, stay above water that I ended up one night, I thought I was having a heart attack. So I went to the hospital, and they said, no, you're not having a heart attack, you're having anxiety.
Oh, it's just a panic
attack.
What,
anxiety?
That's all it is.
I had no idea, and it seemed way too simple for what I was feeling. So what had happened is all those years had built up, and my body couldn't handle it anymore. There's, you know, the concept of rest is right there. That's when it started. And so I ended up kind of having to pull apart my life and what was stressing me. I had to be very, very honest. And that's kind of where it started, because that post-traumatic stress was almost an open door for God to say, hey, we got some other stuff to deal with here. And that's when I started to examine my life in the church and examine what I had grown up with and what was wrong and all these things. And to be honest, it, like, increased my depression. It increased the insomnia. It increased everything, because I had never looked at my life so transparent. I had to admit to myself that I lived a lie for a lot of years. I had to admit to myself that I didn't know what I believed. That's a scary place to be. Like, Clint, when is the last time that you said to yourself, yeah, I don't actually believe anything? Of course not, because we all believe something. But then you get to a point where you actually say, you know what, I just don't know. I don't know what to believe. So right now, I think I have to believe nothing. That is terrifying.
Yeah, I've been there.
That's kind of like where it started, you know?
And I think the thing about the whole thing of this deconstruction is, and I know it's different for everybody, isn't it? That it's emotionally threatening. That's because it's our former lives in evangelicalism. If anyone listening is going, hey, yeah, that's I grew up in the church, or I've had a big experience with evangelicalism, it becomes your very identity. It's all wrapped up, like you say. Like me, I grew up in the church too. I was there from day one. So that's all I knew. I went to Christian school. I went to Christian high school. I went to Bible college. I went to seminary. I mean, I was a minister. I was a pastor. I've spent my entire adult life either in church or in academics or in leadership or teaching other people to become pastors. That's what I've been doing my whole life. So to walk away from all of that, I don't, you know, I'm kind of going, where's next? What happens next? So yeah, it's a very threatening emotionally place to be.
And you question your existence. For me, I questioned the nature of God, how he fit in my life now, and what does that mean for me? So when you start shedding that lifetime of religious beliefs and teachings, you realize that religion has hijacked the truth and the never-ceasing love of a father. And so if you can come to this place where you start to shed all of that stuff, yes, that's wonderful. But for me, it helped me and it harmed me, because I didn't know who I was. I'm questioning who I am. And that led to this great loneliness. And like I said, no one can understand me. I was so alone and no one can hear me. And to be told that you've got family praying for your salvation, to be honest, it kind of makes you go, am I right? Like, maybe I'm wrong. What if I'm wrong? Oh, my goodness, I'm wrong. And then fear comes in. And you're thinking, oh, I'm going to go to hell. But, you know, like, it's just, it's messy. For me, that messy, horrible place, I found myself somewhere I had never been before. that deep loneliness brought me to a place of thinking about taking my own life.
Yes, I realize that it is very cruel to leave you hanging like that, leaving us with the question of what happened next. Well, obviously, Stacy didn't commit suicide, but I'm going to leave it there this week where she's at her lowest ebb, kind of at rock bottom. Where do you go from here? Either going to kill yourself or you're going to find a way to get back up out of that pit. And we're going to hear how Stacy was able to do that in next week's episode. So you are not going to want to miss that at all. And one of the things that really struck me, the irony of the whole thing, was that actually her deconstruction only fueled further her depression, her anxiety, her sense of loneliness. Ironically, it was that very journey that took her down lower and lower and lower. So you're thinking, wait a minute, isn't this supposed to be the path to freedom? Isn't there life after evangelicalism? Well, I don't know. Stacy's going to talk about how she got out of that pit, how she was able to do that next week and retain, weirdly enough, her view of God, her different views of the Bible, and everything changed. So we're going to find out next week how that exactly happened. What's coming up in the next few weeks after the conversation with Stacy next week? I'm going to be bringing you a couple of episodes with a new friend who's from the Netherlands, Dr. Josh DeKeyser. He has spent about the last 8 or 9 years living over in the States and has only recently moved back to Holland. And we're going to talk about some fascinating things. He too, like Sarah Smith, like Stacy Ray, has been able to retain a certain aspect of his Christianity, a certain aspect of his view of God, although it is radically deconstructed like these other two and reconstructed. And he's got a theology of the cross. And we chatted a little bit the other day about this on a Facebook call, and it was absolutely fascinating to hear how Josh is able to work all this stuff out. And he's very theologically oriented. So if you're into theology, into biblical studies, and you want to kind of work your way through these things from a theological or biblical point of view, then Josh is your guy. Now, the other thing is, coming up in a few weeks, I think I'm going to be on the Out of Eden podcast with Sam Morris. We did a recording a few weeks ago, and actually I'm going to be talking to him. So I am super excited. I'm going to be bringing you Sam Morris from the Out of Eden podcast coming up after the discussions with Josh DeKeyser. So thank you once again for joining me here on Mindshift Podcast. I've been your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, bringing you part one of my conversation with Stacy Ray, the resting traveler, talking about her new book, Into the Forest. We're going to get more into the book next week, so stay tuned for that. Thank you for joining us once again. I will see you next Friday right here on Mindshift Podcast. Yes,